Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
First degree murder with special circumstances. Lying in wait. Financial gain. Killing a witness. Lewd acts with a person under the age of 14. Mutilation of the remains. Those are the charges that have now been filed against David Anthony Burke, the artist known as David, D4VD, in the death of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. It's finally come down. Prosecutors say Celeste walked into his Hollywood Hills home on April 23rd of last year and was never heard from again. Her dismembered body was found 5 months later in the trunk of his Tesla. The DA says the death penalty is on the table. And that's where we drop. That's where we begin today, Tuesdays with Bob, here on the podcast. Tuesday. Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, of course, with us. And Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Go check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Let's start there, Bob. Prosecutors didn't just charge first-degree murder. They stacked special circumstances on top of it. It's like an infomercial. But wait, there's more. Lying in wait, murder for financial gain, killing of a witness. In California, that's death penalty eligible material. When the DA loads a case like that on day one, is that about what they can actually prove? Or is it about going in crazily strong with a lot of leverage and controlling the narrative?
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
I really do. In this case, I think it probably leans towards the proof. I mean, it took them a long time to arrest him.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Months and months. We're all like, what the hell is going on? Like, they found her in his car. Like, what? Like, where's the arrest? And then it finally happens. You know, but I could tell you, DAs in LA do not file death eligible cases on a whim. You know what I mean? Like, they're not coming in with weak evidence. So, by all accounts, it appears that they've built a pretty strong case, you know, because each one of those allegations has to be proven independently of one another, obviously. So it's interesting, man, and it's like I never heard of the guy. Like, I didn't listen to his music. I wasn't aware of him until this case broke. Mm-hmm. So I didn't kind of understand the significance of it. But, you know, when you started to hear kind of the factual background that she was missing for so long, I just raised so many questions in my mind. Like, where was the family? You know, not that I'm putting anything on the family, but
yeah,
my 14-year-old's gone for months.
I got questions there too. I mean, I'm not giving the family a free pass on any of this shit. Yeah. Because I'm sorry, we both have children of that same age, and I can't conceive of ever being, oh yeah, she went out with her 19-year-old boyfriend who's a music artist, and she didn't come back. Like, it's just another day in paradise.
And we've seen a lot of parental failings across all the cases we've been covering lately. Complete failures
everywhere. Yeah. And I'm not saying that they, I mean, they're mourning. I get it. But I'm sorry, it's not a free pass because your daughter is dead that you didn't fail her as well, because you did. Yeah. That's what it is. I'm sorry you failed your daughter. I'm sure you feel horrible about it too. Maybe this should be a lesson learned for other folks who are currently failing their children. You know, this is how it could end.
It could be one of those cases where, you know, I hate to say it, but survivor's guilt might be very earned.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt.
I don't wish it on them whatsoever, but I'm sorry. I'm not just going to pretend. Right. Oh, justice will be. Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe if there was a little better parenting to begin with, we wouldn't be in this position to begin with.
Yeah, that's dude. It's so true. And, you know, but I mean, ultimately, the way that I think this thing will play out, if in fact it goes to trial, which, you know, if you're listening to what his attorney is saying, it sounds like it's going to.
Yeah.
But, you know, attorneys always talk that game early on in the game. You know, oh, my client's innocent. We're going to fight to the. Mm-hmm. You know, so like things change as discovery starts to come in,
right.
and you start to look at and you're like, wow, you're screwed here, man. Like, they've got some pretty powerful shit.
And I want to kind of begin asking you, because it's something that came to my mind, and I'm being very cautious as we begin this, because you've taught me to be learning from you over the years here on these cases. You know, obviously, the spotlight's on the DA right now. It's their time to shine. It's their time to say their big piece and make it look like this is cut and dry and it is what it is. Obviously, the defense is their turn to do it, too. We're going to go to trial probably at some point. Is there anything to be said of the strength of this case with the fact that the way that he has been arrested and has been charged? It wasn't through a grand jury indictment. It was him being arrested under what is it, probable cause, basically, or something of that nature. And then eventually the DA comes back within 48 hours and makes the charges. Anything to be said there?
I don't think so. I think that it was probably really done that way in order to kind of shine a light on it, mm-hmm. you know, because we all became aware of it when the arrest took place. You know, I was tweeting about it. It was strange to me the way that it was done because, mm-hmm. you know, and it's different, like in different jurisdictions, but there's a pretty bright line rule in terms of your ability to keep somebody detained in custody for beyond 48 hours without it mm-hmm. slipping into the realm of being unconstitutional mm-hmm. if you don't charge them or at least go in and get some probable cause and get it on paper. And it was sounding like that they hadn't done that because I saw some maybe misreporting that he had been charged by complaint, which I think turned out not to be true. And we knew that he wasn't indicted. So, mm-hmm. but I think ultimately they wanted it to play out over the weekend. I think mm-hmm. even though, you know, I think there was the aspect of them being, you know, hoping that they'd be able to take a run at him in terms of being able to get him to talk, even though he knew he was repped, you know, and I'm sure his lawyer went in immediately and said, my guy's not talking to you. So, you know, go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, given the way that the floodgates look like they opened, you know, with all this information, with all these charges that I wasn't really expecting all at once, does it look like they got a flip on this?
I mean, kind of. Like, they had to have had something like substantial to get it to the point where they're at right now, right? Mm-hmm. And to go back to Tony's question, I think the biggest thing that we can take away from the amount of charges that were levied against them, they've been building the case. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that this is a situation where the left hand didn't necessarily know what the right hand was doing, that being law enforcement in the DA's office. I think they were in communication pretty heavily because they're not coming up with these types of charges over a weekend. You know, I mean, there's a lot of thought, and I think we're going to probably get into some of the specific charges because there's some novel theories here in the way that they're applying some of these charges.
Yeah.
You know, so there was clearly a lot of thought that was put into it. I think that they were playing it a certain way to the press in order to kind of get the lights on it. And, you know, it was going to be the big day when they came out and issued the presser in terms of what they were charging him with. Yeah, so
smart moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about the financial gain allegation, because that's specific. And it kind of takes us out of the realm here of, you know, was it a horrible accident of some sort? And then this is just a cover up by people who are young and dumb and don't know what the hell they're doing. And, you know, it ended up being, you know, the cover up ended up being far worse than the actual crime. The allegation here of financial gain, the DA said David allegedly killed Celeste to protect his music career because she was, quote, threatening it that night. That means prosecutors believe they can prove motive here, that a 14-year-old girl was killed because she was a liability to someone's brand, essentially, you know, insinuating that if it came out that he's an adult, is having a relationship with a 14-year-old, that could destroy your career pretty damn quick. And the quickest way to protect that is getting rid of the threat, which is her. That's pretty specific to go in with that sort of a claim. One would assume they must have some sort of evidence to prove that sort of a motive. I'm guessing some sort of digital footprint, some sort of text, email. I mean, that's just my speculation. What do you think that they have to be able to levy that sort of a charge that specific against David?
It is a very aggressive application of the financial gain aspect of mm-hmm. it. You know, it really is, because traditionally what you're talking about, like you saw it in Corey Richens, you're talking about like insurance proceeds, like, or they were trying to get to a will. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that's where it's kind of a motive thing, but there's actually a financial gain at the end of, at the end of the crime for the person. So it was one of the reasons why they committed the crime. And here, like you said, man, it's like this concept of protecting a career really stretches that doctrine like quite a bit. And the defense is going to attack it on the legal grounds before it ever makes it to a jury. I mean, that's going to be one of the counts that's going to be very highly litigated. But I think that we're seeing it more and more from prosecutors across the country in terms of them having a willingness to stretch kind of the boundaries of what have traditionally been established in terms of certain statutes. I mean, we saw it with the Colin Gray case and the Crumbleys, where, they kind of stretched these statutes to include people that wouldn't have otherwise have been prosecuted under that same statute ever prior to. So I think that that's starting to embolden prosecutors across the country to say, all right, well, we think we can make it fit. Ultimately, if the charge survives pretrial motions, it's going to be up to the jury to decide whether or not, I think it's a bridge too far, or you're right. I see what you're saying here. I think it does fit. So it's going to be really a pretty interesting aspect of the case in terms of kind of law, like a law nerd perspective. But they're going to have digital evidence, I mean, in order to prove it, they're going to have, because obviously, sadly, Celeste isn't here.
Yeah.
So, you're not going to have the ability to be able to put her on the stand and say, yeah, I threatened him with this the night of. So hopefully they have some kind of digital footprint, that says whether it's DMs, texts, where they're going at it. But, the problem is she was typically with him, I mean, that's not to say, look, I mean, my wife and I text from within the same house. If I'm upstairs, she's downstairs.
Sure.
But I mean, the reality is we're usually screaming through the house because we're very loud people. But, normal people, I think, might hit each other up from it. So, I mean, there's a chance that it exists there. And again, I don't think they're bringing the charge if they don't have the ability to be able to prove it up in their minds. What I'm saying? So I anticipate that we're going to be able to see something that's kind of like saying, all right, look, this is the evidence that we have. And we'll see that when it's litigated pre-trial. I mean, they're going to have to put some kind of offer of proof up in order to show that, look, this statute applies here, and this is why, and this is the evidence that we have to support it. So,
yeah, it's interesting with this financial aspect because, I mean, I dug into it a couple of days ago, and I literally just did the research on it again now. He's not any, from what is open source and what you can garner, I mean, his net worth is a couple million. Granted, it's not chump change, but at the same time, it's around the realm of successful podcasters. I mean, this is not like someone who is huge. I mean, successful,
yeah.
But he's a TikTok success. So it's interesting that they place so much value on him and his and this net worth and financial side when it's not a lot there. It's there, but I don't know. I still think it's. When you got a lot of 15-year-olds and teenagers and 20-year-olds doing stupid shit, I think their digital footprint is going to give them up, because whether you have the David and Celeste text going back and forth is one thing, but I think everyone else in that circle, how do you shut them up? I mean, I don't think they're going to be shut up. I think that's why there's so many charges.
It's going to be really, really difficult. I mean, somebody in the inner circle had to have flipped. And I
or
agree.
A lot of people in the inner circle.
Yeah. I mean,
fear and a 20-year-old go hand in hand, Jim.
Oh, yeah. And that's an easy flip there, too.
Yeah.
It's either you want to go down with them or you want to talk.
Because right, in other words, I mean, it's apples and oranges comparing this to like the Diddy case or anything related to it. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. I mean, this is we'll call an up and comer that is low end, moderately successful music wise. Like you hadn't heard of him. I hadn't heard of him. I mean, some people had heard of him, which is great, but he wasn't mainstream making
He was brand new. Tones. I mean, yeah. I mean, he had just performed at Coachella. He had his debut album coming out. There was a lot of potential.
Potential, right? Yeah, right. And potential that, energy, right there. It's what it
that's
is.
That's where it wrought, you know. Like, yeah. Both ways, really.
Do you litigate potential?
Well, like it's bigger than that because I mean the argument really would be from the DA's perspective. Look, I hear what you're saying. He doesn't have Diddy money. And that brand, but that brand's established. It's right. Like, look at the Kanye West shit. Like mm-hmm. The guy had lost his mind when he said, I'm all better. I'm taking my meds. You know, his brand was alive and well again. I think it's a stronger argument, frankly, when you are an up and comer that there's a lot more incentive for you to go to great lengths, even mm-hmm. psychotic lengths to protect that building mm-hmm. brand because it's your way out. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to have already made it. So it's an interesting thing. I think it's the weakest of all the charges. But again, as a law nerd, I'm anxious to see him try to apply.
Yeah.
It.
And again, I still because of the up and coming of it means he doesn't have. And my reference really to the Diddy or even Kanye is the tightness of the circle, which they have reps of protection of their own breadwinner, because really without the main breadwinner at the center core, they're pretty much nothing. And him being an up and comer, that tightness of that core group, I can't imagine is tight enough that you wouldn't have everyone spilling their guts when threatened with, hey, you can get a few scraps today, or you can go away for jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I want to talk about another charge. Prosecutors have also charged continuous S acts and lewd acts with an individual under 14. And one of the special circumstances, then killing a witness is tied directly to Celeste being a witness to those acts and also being the victim. So the prosecution's theory is that the S relationship with her created the motive to end her life, essentially. They're saying, and the defense for David hasn't addressed any of those specifically, but they have addressed the ending her life part, that he is not responsible. They've said in certain words, he's not responsible for the end of her life. Continuous S acts. That's an interesting phrasing, and you can probably expand upon that, Bob, a bit. But continuous S acts, they're going to have some sort of evidence to prove that that is what's going on. I'm wondering if it's digital. And number two, could this be a case where David ends up, maybe they can show that he wasn't responsible for her actual death, but he could walk away a registered S offender for the rest of his life for having done these sort of things continuously, according to the prosecution, with someone under the age of 14.
Yeah. And I mean, it's classic prosecutorial architecture, really. Yeah. And they did it in a really kind of elegantly cold way, mm-hmm. you know, because the S crimes do two things at once. They really establish the motive mm-hmm. for the murder. And then they also bootstrap, you know, the killings of, you know, the killing a witness special, you know, because like that's the other part of it. Because that's, you know, when I say special, it's those that word is what's making it potentially a death penalty case. Mm-hmm. So, and when I'm talking about bootstrapping, it's basically where they're saying, okay, I'm gonna put this saddle on this other really strong charge in order to get to the second charge.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the concept of bootstrapping, and prosecutors do it all the time, and it's a very effective way to get convictions on those charges. You know, the fact of the matter is that she was the only living witness mm-hmm. to a felony that would have ended his career, his freedom, and everything that comes along with it. So what's going to be interesting is kind of the cross admissibility, you know, because in a S crime prosecution in LA or in California, you know, you can introduce the kind of the SO evidence. Mm-hmm. So even if it's an uncharged conduct, meaning that they can show patterns, prior victims, grooming behavior, they can put all that stuff in. And then that makes the underlying S case way harder to defend in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And it makes the murder case much harder to peel apart in terms of that bootstrapping concept from the predicate offenses. So predicate is kind of like a charge that you have to, you know, something that you had to have done in order to have committed this other thing. You know, like the best way to kind of explain predicate offenses is in terms of like the meth trade. So when they started making Sudafed, you know, they made that as a predicate offense to cooking meth, because as they started to develop these cases, they started to learn that that was one of the primary ingredients, that these guys would go out to different pharmacies, buy up tons of Sudafed, and then use that to cook up the Sudafed. So when they started realizing, all right, well, this is the way to nail them on it, we're going to start making people have to give their IDs if you're going to want to go in and get like Sudafed. You know, so what you do, like if you go into a pharmacy, at least in our state and most states, you got to give your ID, and that's so you're on their radar, and then they'll know. And that's really a precursor predicate of cooking meth. So think of it that way in terms of how they're trying to kind of layer that particular charge in to bootstrap it to the murder charge. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to get them. Those are the charges against David. Weigh in. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.